started. Now that Senator Pretner Solon has arrived, we can listen to Senate File 3337.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your indulgence. When we have these short deadline weeks and short time to get there are so many committees that are meeting at all hours of day and night, and so it's been difficult to get our bills heard. And unfortunately, I was held up in another committee at this time. So I appreciate your indulgence. And I have Senate Files 3337, Mr. Chair, and I do have a delete all amendment to put it in the shape that the author would like. And I this time I move the A2 amendment.
Senator Pretner Solon moves the A2 amendment. Is the author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 3337 requires an annual report. Let me first set a stage for this. When we heard the report from the administration on recommendations, there was some consensus among members of the committee that we should have some overarching policy about how we would proceed with implementing the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007 and the recommendations that come out of the MCAG group. So what this is a bill that puts together those policies and the procedures that should be established in order to implement those policies. So what it does is it requires an annual report from the Minnesota Department of Commerce and the Pollution Control Agency that outlines steps the state should take in order to attain the greenhouse gas emissions reductions goals that we passed into law last session with the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007. The legislature and the governor showed strong leadership last session by passing these nation-leading greenhouse gas emission reduction targets, and therefore we need to make sure that we have a process that tracks the state's progress in meeting those goals. I offered the delete all amendment already. Senate File 3337 would require that by November 1st of each year until 2050, the commissioners of Commerce and the Pollution Control Agency must provide the legislature with a report detailing their plans to meet the greenhouse gas emissions reductions required for the next year. The reductions plan must be based on and supported by the best available technical evidence. It must be provided to the legislature and disseminated to the public in an easily understood, non-technical format. The plan must include draft legislation, including any budget requests that are necessary for reduction attainment. It must specify the reductions that are required for the coming year and the reduction value attributed to each component of the plan. The reduction plan submitted on an annual basis by the commissioners must be based on the following principles. First, the reductions must be attained. Second, the reductions must be attained on a schedule that keeps pace with the reduction timetable that is required by Section 216H.02, Subdivision 1, which sets out the state's greenhouse gas emissions reduction goal. Third, conservation and energy efficiency is the first choice of reduction. Fourth, public education is a key component. Fifth, government should lead by example. And sixth, strategies that may lead to economic dislocation should be phased in and should be coupled with strategies that address the dislocation. In every aspect of the plan, the commissioners must include a public education component that provides the latest evidence on the effects of greenhouse gas emissions. The education component must stress that the reductions not only seek to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but also to conserve non-renewable fossil fuel resources that have a dwindling supply. In order to encourage coordination with other states in the region, the plan must include a review of the activities other states are undertaking to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, including a review of budgetary initiatives to achieve their reductions. The commissioners must allow for public comment on the plan and seek advice from stakeholders in the development of the plan. The members of the Legislative Electric Energy Task, the commissioners must submit a preliminary draft of the plan to the members of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force by October 1st of each year and make a formal presentation of the plan to the task force each November. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, this concludes the summary of the proposal, and I'm willing at this time to take any questions that you might have.
Any questions from the members? Senator Senjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Solon. There's a lot here, and I'm honestly trying to figure it out, and you're way ahead of me, I think, in that regard. But okay, we have an overall goal, as I recall, it's 80% by 2050 in terms of emissions of current greenhouse gases. And we're incrementally over this period of time now we're going to reduce from where we are down to 80% now. And we're going to have the annual report, and that's going to describe how we're doing and what we need to do more to get there. And we're putting all that on the commissioners of PCA and Commerce. And what if we get to 2024 and we just can't move that mountain any further in terms of achieving goals? And none of us know, I don't think for sure, if we're going to be able to get there. I mean, it's a goal, and that's laudatory. But we're almost, I think, in the plan. And I suppose you can always call time out, and we have to change the statute and revise our vision maybe a little bit. But it seems to me we're putting a lot of pressure on a system to get us there. And obviously we need to have pressure. But what if we just kind of gridlock in terms of our progress?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum. Actually, it isn't, I don't think, that difficult. We did lay out our goals and our plans in the bill that we passed last year. We then requested of the MCAG group that they lay out a plan for how we were going to implement that. They have met. They've decided that we can meet those goals. And so now the question is, what is the most efficient and the most effective way of reaching those goals? And we're just asking for incremental steps on a year-by-year basis. We're not asking for the whole shebang now. We're asking, in order to meet our goal for the each incremental step until the first benchmark is 215, then what are the steps that we need to take next year? And what are the reductions that we will do? And what is the value of each of those reductions that can show to us that we're actually meeting that goal? I don't think it's that difficult. And there are also other principles here, such as education is very important. Educating our public about why we're making these steps. You know, we're going to run out of gas and oil at some point. At some point, we're going to run out of it. So we have to start looking now before it becomes so constraining that we can't move. We have to start looking now at how we're going to accommodate those reductions. It also says that conservation and energy efficiency should be the first things we look at.
Well, Madam, or pardon me, Mr. President.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Mr. President, you got to raise. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you. Even if it's just for a few minutes.
Senator Solon, I just wanted to talk about it, and you've had a good response. And we have to keep pressure points going here, and there's no question about that. It's just. It'll be a grand adventure. I'd like to be around in 2050 and see if we make it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Senator Senjum, me too. I think, though, that actually if we have a structure to follow, it will be easier than just pulling from the air and trying to and saying we should implement this and we should implement this. Let's have a plan for how we're going to get there. And let's look at some of the principles we'll be using to attain it.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under Subdivision 5, line number 3, that's quite a statement there, you know, including ceasing some activities, doing some activities less. Could you give some ideas of what that might play out as?
that might be, I mean, this is just for examples, okay? So maybe it's saying that, and perhaps education has to come first. So maybe it's we can't use as many petroleum products. Maybe plastic bags and things like that, or some plastics. There needs to be some education about why there needs to be a decrease in the use of those. Maybe it means that we start using different types of light bulbs. Maybe it means that we drive our cars less and ride our bikes more, or walk more, or use public transportation more, that type of thing.
A follow-up?
Senator Olsen.
On number five, I think we've had a number of discussions about the way that government could lead. And, you know, today we just looked at a bonding bill. And, you know, but unfortunately, I've talked to a number of Minsky presidents, and, you know, they always say they've looked at doing the right thing. They've looked at geothermal and all of those kinds of things. But when their budget actually came through, it was the geothermal or an energy efficient process was always much more expensive. And the money that they got wasn't enough to do the project and include that in there. So I guess this is just more of a comment that I guess it's maybe some onus on us to set aside money, like in the next bonding bill, that we'd be willing to pay for those, knowing that there's a higher upfront cost, but the returns are so beneficial.
Senator Prentice-Olin.
Yeah, Senator Olsen, we are a step in that direction. If we can pass the Architecture 2030 bill this year, which would require that all public buildings would have increasing energy efficiency until 2030, they would be carbon neutral. And that would be all buildings that would be bonded for. So that is taking on some responsibility by the state government, by public entities.
Senator Vanderveer and then Senator Dibble.
I'm going to pass, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Olsen's point, and also if we pass my green bonds, bonding provision, it's in the House side, it's not in the Senate side, allows local units to receive a grant for those incremental costs that cost more in the short term but have the longer-term payoff for the lease purchase financing mechanism that I presented in this committee a few days ago. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to just comment on this bill, somewhat responding to Senator Senjum. I don't know what the alternative to a bill like this is. The alternative is to not attain our greenhouse gas reductions, and then, and then if you want to see consequence to our economy, then we've got some real consequence. You know, we've got an environment that's not going to be sustainable in any meaningful way, and we'll see huge shifts in how we live and how we do business and carry out just activities of daily life in Minnesota. So I don't know what the alternative to a bill like this is, Senator Senjum. And I think what this bill aspires to accomplish is fulfilling what I think we thought we passed last year, which was, pulling together the MCAG group and then having them having a plan result from that. And we seem to not get that back. And so I think Senator Prentice-Olin, our chair, is saying that we need a plan, and it needs to be specific, and it needs to have goals and values and a vision, and we need specific ideas coming back to the legislature if significant policy changes that require resources are going to be needed. So I think it's a good bill.
I would have to agree that we should have a blueprint, exactly, that we're going to need multiple strategies to do this to accomplish our goal, and I think we're starting to hit a lot of those with the 2030 buildings and with Senator Dibble, your bill, and some of the other things that are going on, and it's going to take multiple levels of addressing this problem, but we do need an overall blueprint and an ongoing recheck of what we're doing and how we're making progress. So this is, a step in that direction. Senator Prentice-Olin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, in no way do I want to minimize all the effort of the members of the legislature and the good bills that have been introduced, because we need all of those tools. But this really just lays out a plan and a vision for addressing how will we take those tools and how will we value those tools and which ones should we be adopting first or putting into effect first or in what order.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Prentner-Solon. I think this is a really important idea, and I was really glad to see you put this together, especially after we had our discussion about the MCAG recommendations, and I think that kind of triggered the discussion of saying, how are we going to measure progress? And this is a really important part of doing that. We were just having a little discussion before committee about how to monitor progress that we're making. And I think you have this plan reporting to the LEETF. Mike Robertson of the Chamber had floated some language yesterday that you and I saw about creating a climate change task force or something. And somebody, was it Jenny? Someone was just telling me that there's a bill to take the electric energy task force and perhaps turn that into some kind of a more of a formal legislative entity for monitoring progress on climate change. And I think that would fit really well with this idea, too, so that we're requiring a strategic specific plan from the executive branch and combine that with the legislature monitoring the progress that we're making through legislative initiatives. So I think those ideas would really fit well together.
Any other questions or comments from members? Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Stolen, could I just refer you to lines 21 through 23? And I think my concern here is that this seems to me, at least, to play put an awful lot of responsibility on the commissioner, maybe as opposed to the legislature, with respect to attaining reductions, and even to the point we're asking the commissioner to draft legislation. I can't imagine along this pathway that legislators aren't also going to draft legislation and be part of this mix and this process for getting us there. Do you really intend? It just seems as I read that you're almost placing sole burden of achieving this goal on the commissioner. And I just wonder whether, and I don't know, the commissioner can speak for himself, but whether or not we ought to be doing that and placing that much responsibility on a single agency or person.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Senator Senjum, this isn't unlike the budget requests that come from the departments every year or the department bills for changes in policy or statutes, cleanup language that come from the department each year. It's just a way of keeping an accounting. And, yes, the legislature sometimes introduces bills, and maybe they'll conflict. But I think it's important that, again, we identify the structure by which we want the state to move forward and the best way for us to implement the plan as we see fit. I don't think it's unreasonable to ask them then to bring their plan to us, and we can compare it with the legislative plan if necessary. Maybe we'll just fall in love with their plan and move it forward.
In addition, Senator Senjum, I think if we looked at the purpose of this bill, it was intentional to put in here the wording non-exclusive. So we'll have other approaches. There are going to be the content of this bill, obviously, is for the commissioner, but it won't be the only way of doing things, and it won't put all the burden on just one department or one commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Senator Solon, though it does say in line 121 that every year for 50 years, I guess it wouldn't be 50 yet, 40 years, the commissioner is going to have to include draft legislation. Whether it's of any substance or not, I don't know, but it does say must include draft legislation. It's not a may. It's not permissive or anything like that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, if you go on, it says that are necessary for reduction attainment. If we already have a plan in place, maybe it's been something that has incremental steps, then no additional legislation would be required.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Senator Prettner-Solem, the only question, I am an author on this bill, and I support this bill, but I do have a question on Subdivision 6, the public education piece. Is there going to be a fiscal note or some kind of monetary? Do we just automatically expect the department to fund this public education piece, or should we be placing some dollars there?
Well, I suppose they can always Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm sure that they can always impose a fiscal note, but my hunch is that they have some discretionary dollars, and the amount of education will determine whatever the campaign is for that year in terms of where we're going.
And I'm also told, I guess, until something is actually proposed, they won't come out with a fiscal note. So. Additional questions from members? Senator Prettner-Solem, did you have someone that you wanted to testify as well?
I'm not sure. Is there a list of testifiers up there?
We do. Brad Leto, from the Minnesota AFL-CIO. Welcome, and if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. It might seem Brad Leto, Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and Jennifer Schaubach is our new legislative director, and there's numerous meetings going on at this time, so she's not here for the hearing. It may seem somewhat odd to have the I know some people have said that, to have the Minnesota AFL-CIO here on the legislation, this legislation, Senator Solomon's bill and Senator Anderson's later. However, and I do have that can be handed out at any time if some principles that were adopted by our general board November 29th. And as you'll see from looking at them, they go probably a lot further than the legislation here. And part of that reason was doing it was setting, trying to set goals, understanding that the legislature is likely to take steps in this direction over time, and we think that's appropriate. This legislation, Senate File 3337, we think is very important. We are very appreciative of the legislation passed last year of Senator Solon and Senator Anderson that we thought was very good, and this sets actually criteria to start looking at to make sure that we meet those goals. Just to respond to a couple of the questions, I know that, you know, what if we don't meet them? What if we don't? After 22 years at legislature, 14 as a staff person in the House and 8 from the Minnesota AFL-CIO looking in, no legislature is bound by the previous legislature, and a lot of legislatures over the years have always taken up new legislation to adapt to what is happening at the time, and I think the reports come through. And it would seem to me, I know that in other types of reports that are required by commissioners, and it says to have legislation, I know that in some cases where they've come back in 1 year, they said, you know, this year we don't need legislation to, you know, not on this specific, but on to attain whatever goal, but we probably will come back next year or the year after with some legislation. So I think as part of the report, they could come back and say, it seems to me that this year we're meeting the goals. We probably don't need to do anything else for a year or two, that sort of thing. Anyway, we certainly endorse this approach, and also in the legislation, we do certainly appreciate the strategies that lead to economic dislocation phased in a couple of strategies to address the dislocation, because we know that with the changing economy, and we're certainly not foreign to a changing economy in all industries where we have unionized employers or our affiliates have unionized employees. So we certainly understand that and appreciate that realization in here as well. And just to let you know, the principles that you've seen that you're probably saying, well, how can you endorse this sort of thing? It was endorsed by a 75-member general board, and actually the principles were, we've had a labor environmental group that have worked over the years. I'm not going to say that the environmental group endorses these exact principles, but they were presented to the general board by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers State Council for adoption, and they were discussed at the General Board in November, and there was no objection to them. So I'll be happy to stand for any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Leto. Any questions from members? Thanks for your comments. Is there anyone else in the audience here that would like to testify for or against this bill? Not. Senator Prettner-Solon?
Mr. Chair, if there are no questions, then I would move that Senate File 3337 as amended be recommended to pass. I'm not sure where it goes.
And it goes referred to the floor.
Referred to the floor.
Senator Prettner-Solon moves that 3337 be referred or recommended to pass and as amended and referred to the floor. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion
Thank
carries.
You.
And for the record, I wanted to go back to just last Thursday. I, in my inexperience here at the chair, I mistakenly referred an amendment to Senator Dahl instead of Senator Rosen, as I should have, and I apologize for that. But we do have a very able staff here, and they caught my mistake as we're going and recorded it properly.
I took them to the shed, too. Senator Anderson on Senate File 2818.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members. This bill, Madam Chair and committee members, is related to the regional cap and trade process. And it's, well, let me start by, again, reminding the committee of the very strong goals that we passed. We just discussed this in Senator Prettner-Solon's presentation. I think we've been reminded of it many times. But these greenhouse gas reduction goals that we have set us on a path. And this bill is an effort to help define that path, at least in the first step. The governor, as you all know, signed an agreement working with six other governors and the province of Manitoba last November. He signed the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Accord. And I think we passed out copies of that agreement. It's a couple pages. And in that agreement, they said that they are going to – they've agreed to have a regional cap-and-trade program in the Midwest that will be negotiated by the governors. And the timeline that they set forth is by this November, November 08, they will put together a model rule that reflects agreement among those governors. That it would be a multi-sector cap and trade, meaning that it goes beyond the electricity sector, which is what we've talked about the most so far, and would go to more multi-sectors of the economy. And then the other part of the timeline that they've established is that they intend to reach a final agreement by, I believe, May 2010. So I strongly support that agreement and that process. And my bill is an effort to have the legislature weigh in as legislators and have a voice, somewhat of a voice, in moving that process forward, but doing it on a parallel track. We want to work together on this, and we certainly don't want to tie the governor's hands or prevent him from moving forward. I think, I think everybody agrees, no matter where you're coming from, that a regional cap and trade is better than a state one. That the bigger the universe that's covered by a cap, the better off we all are. And so working towards a regional process is critically important. So I really applaud the governor and the other governors for coming together on this agreement. We'll talk later also, I'm sure there'll be testimony about a national cap and trade program. And I guess I should just mention that by saying we all know all the major presidential candidates support a national cap and trade program. We know it's coming. It's just a matter of when exactly and what it will look like. But one of the arguments I would make is that having a Midwest regional process go forward is complementary, not in conflict, with having a national cap and trade program eventually. Because if we wait, then the folks in Washington will decide what that looks like. But if we start now and continue in the process of negotiating and setting up a regional plan that works best for these Midwestern states, I think we're at an advantage. So whether the Midwest process finishes first or whether a national process moves forward, I think either way, it makes sense for the governors to go and get to work trying to put together a program that would really be best for the Midwest. And so what we attempted to do in this bill was to establish some principles that the Minnesota legislature believes should be incorporated in this Midwest cap-and-trade program. And the basic principles are, first of all, that we want to meet those reduction goals. That's the overriding principle, that we have to reduce our greenhouse gases by the amounts we've agreed to in the bill passed by Senator Prettner Solon last year. We also want to make sure that it's done in a way that's fair, that protects the public interest, that helps consumers and businesses make the transition in the best way possible to this carbon-constrained, carbon-limited economy, this new green economy that's coming. We want to make sure there's no loopholes, no windfalls, no economic dislocation, and that we help the most energy-intensive industries make a transition as well. So in the original bill, I want to talk just a little bit about what my original bill did in comparison to the A4 amendment. And you should have both of those in front of you, because we've spent a lot of time over the last week or so working with stakeholders to try to improve the bill. And so I just want to highlight a couple of features that were in the original bill and talk about how we've changed those. In the original bill, we said one of the principles that we should support, that I believe that I would like to see us support, is the concept that 100% of the allowances should be auctioned. And what that essentially means is that when you get a permit under a cap system, you have to get a permit to emit greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide. You'll have to have a permit to do that. Right now, you don't have to. There's no limits on it. You're not legally or financially limited from putting that kind of pollution in the atmosphere. Under the new system, you'll have to have a permit to do that. That permit has a lot of value. It is because we're setting limits, we're creating value for this allowance. And so there's a big debate raging about whether those allowances should be given away to those who emit carbon dioxide and global warming emissions or sold to those who emit. And I just want to briefly make a couple of arguments in favor of selling them and then talk about how we're trying to accommodate the concern for those who don't want to sell them. It's really an issue of fairness, because the atmosphere belongs to all of us. It's a public value that we have clean air and that we have an atmosphere that supports life. And so the economists say, Steve Pulaski, who's an economist at the University of Minnesota, testified in the last committee and said, he won't be here today, I don't believe, but he said, economists would ask, why would you give away the right to pollute for free? That it economically makes sense to assign a cost to that. There's a lot of folks that support the concept of 100% auction. I know Mr. Leto from the AFL-CIO already testified that their position is for all the allowances to be auctioned off. Both of the major presidential Democratic candidates, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, both have their position is for 100% auction of allowances. The advantage to auctioning it is that it creates a way to protect consumers. Because if you pay for these allowances, you have a fund that you can use to help rebate the costs the increased cost of energy to consumers. And at the same time, so you can help them go through this transition without undue harm, and at the same time, you can provide intensive, very quick efforts to reduce energy consumption. So, for example, all those old leaky houses like mine around the state of Minnesota that need windows and insulation, that need new energy-efficient furnaces, if we could, you know, under a cap, those kinds of improvements may not be done as quickly as they could be because they're expensive. But if we can provide some economic incentives or grants that can really help make those improvements quickly, we can provide rebates for energy costs. At the same time, we provide really strong assistance, really quick, aggressive measures to try to reduce our energy consumption and our energy costs so that pretty soon you have an overall reduction in energy usage in a way that will have the long-term help that consumers need. So you can also use a climate trust revenue to try to protect energy-intensive industries and also provide really aggressive measures to help them make a very quick transition to put every effort into reducing their energy consumption. So there's a lot of economic arguments and fairness arguments in favor of that auctioning. So I just wanted to lay those out there. Some of the other principles that we put into the original bill relate to having a multi-sector cap. As I mentioned, we spent a lot of time in the past few years talking about how to reduce electricity use through efficiency, through more renewables. But now that we have an overall cap structure envisioned, it has to cover more than just the electricity sector if we're really going to do the job. And the electricity sector in Minnesota is doing a really good share of the job based on our requirements. It's got to expand to transportation, buildings, natural gas, large industrial emitters, other sectors of our economy where we all play a part in producing those emissions. So now I'm trying to find the right notes. Sorry. All right. So what we did in our stakeholder process was listen to concerns, and Senator Prettner-Solin called this meeting last week. We brought in lots of people came and expressed concerns about the original bill's language. And so let me talk about some of the changes that we made, and then I can go through what is in the A4 amendment, which I'd like to present to the committee, if I may. So essentially, we responded to many of the concerns about auctioning. And I would suggest if you get the A4 amendment out in front of you, that's the bill that I'm going to work off of, and I'd like to offer that to the committee. But one of the most significant things, if you look at the principles in A4, we tried to accommodate some of the concerns about the language that said you have to auction all of the allowances. You have to sell all of them.
Senator Anderson, would you like to offer the A4 amendment at this
time? Sure.
Time?
I will offer that, Madam Chair. But it's since this is the second committee hearing, I thought I should explain it before we...
Okay. So you may explain it now.
Thank you. I'm sorry. It's a little bit of a long, convoluted discussion because I'm trying to compare it with the original bill and kind of tell you how we got from point A to point B. So in terms of the auctioning of 100%, we changed the language on line 1.16 to say you should auction allowances to the extent economically feasible and direct the revenues to the public good. That was an effort to try to deal with that concern. We also, there was a lot of concern expressed about the sectors that would be covered by a cap. And we, in the original bill, we listed out those sectors that I just mentioned, transportation, large industrial emitters, natural gas, et cetera. And there was a lot of concern about which sectors would be included and which wouldn't. So instead of kind of making that decision, we changed our principle to create more of a principle rather than a specific direction about how it has to be done. But on line 1.14, to say it should cover as many emitting sectors as is administratively feasible. and exclude sectors from where you can't objectively quantify the amount of emissions. So anybody who you can really count how much they're emitting should be under the cap. And we took out in the original bill the findings because the Senate doesn't like those very much. We took out the definitions. They seemed a little unnecessary. And one of the concerns we heard from the administration was that the bill as written was too focused on telling the governor, number one, exactly what he could and couldn't do, and number two, implementing our plan prematurely. And so we took out language that really suggested that we were trying to pass a cap-and-trade program now and say it has to say this. And so I took out implementation language and language that said the governor's agreement must be in accord with these principles. So it's trying – what I'm trying to do in the draft you see in front of you is really establish principles that are ideas, that are concepts that we would like to the governor to take with him to keep in mind when he negotiates, but they are not binding. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to capture with this language. We also removed the Climate Trust Fund because the whole issue of auctioning allowances is very controversial, and there was concern that we shouldn't decide before the governors negotiate whether allowances will be auctioned or won't be. And so we took out the money, you know, the pot of money that would be called the Climate Trust Fund and a whole section that would explain how those revenues could be used. And instead decided that that's an issue that really needs study and discussion. And there was a great deal of consensus about the idea of studying some of these issues in terms of the economic costs and benefits. So a lot of the ideas that are still in discussion were incorporated into the studies. So what we did have a lot of consensus on in the stakeholder group was, I think, almost everyone from all sectors, not everyone, but a pretty good majority agree that we need to have a cap-and-trade program, and they're willing to participate in that, whether it be regional or national. There is some difference of opinion. There's strong support for studying the issues that we've laid out in the bill. There's strong support for incentives to help homeowners, businesses, and others make a transition to use less energy. And so that's great, and to help protect consumers from any price increases. And so let me just tell you briefly what's left in the bill. As I mentioned, there's still principles in here, but they're an effort to really be they're not binding principles, but they reflect the intention of the legislature. Section 3 of the bill then says that we ask that after the negotiating process moves forward in the regional states, that the Office of Energy Security would have to report back to the legislature about what they've agreed on and how it relates to the principles expressed here, whether it meets those principles or doesn't, and give us ideas about how we could, what we should do, whether we should go ahead with this regional agreement or try to supplement it with our own state policies, et cetera. And the other piece that we have is to make sure that there is a legislative voice and a legislative presence in this process. So what we propose on page 2 is of the A4 amendment is that the Senate and the House appoint a bipartisan team of several legislators. We said 6, 3 from each body, to be officially engaged in this regional process. Now, it would be as observers. We can't we're not asking that the governor appoint us to be part of the negotiating team. Instead, what we're asking is that these legislators are able to get information about what's happening in the negotiations and are able to attend the meetings and observe them and to offer advice. And, you know, when we had the whole MCAG process going on, there was a number of us that were interested in watching the process and following how it was going along, and we really didn't have any kind of official way to do that. And so this is an effort to just set up a process that would allow participation and engagement in a way that keeps us informed about what they are doing. And then finally, we state that once a cap-and-trade agreement is reached among the states, it still has to be passed into law to be effective. It couldn't just be done through executive order. And I think, again, this is an effort to try to keep that balance between the executive and legislative branches and to move forward on a parallel track. And finally, we have the studies, which have gotten a lot longer since all of our stakeholder discussions. People have added a lot of ideas of issues that they think need more study. And so that's essentially what's in the A4 amendment, and I'd like to move that, if I may, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any questions or any comments about the A4 amendment? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious, and then is the A8? Is the A8 your amendment?
Yeah, I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay, great. Thank you.
On the A4 amendment, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, if I have three other amendments, and I think I'll just offer these now and get them out there so we can all be on the same page in terms of what the language is. And I apologize I didn't have these available for distribution before the committee because we've been working on them all day trying to come up with the right language. So I just received them right at the beginning of the committee. The A8 amendment you all have in front of you, and this is taking some suggestions that came from the chamber about some pieces that should be, I just took pieces that I liked out of their suggestion. It's not their whole proposal. And actually, they had a really good proposal for legislative involvement. But I took Mr. Robertson's suggestions relating to what the report from the administration should be back to the legislature, and you'll see that in the first part of the amendment. And in the second part, the last part of the amendment, you'll see the chamber's suggestions for language that should be part of the study, for information about impacts of costs on businesses and consumers, et cetera. So I thought those were really good suggestions. The only thing that's in here that didn't come from Mike Robertson was 1.16, where we just, at least I don't think this came from him, we clarify that the study, we're suggesting that the Commissioner of Commerce contract with the University of Minnesota or some other higher education institution to do these studies, because these are really comprehensive studies that need to be done. And Mr. Robertson had suggested an assessment to help pay for the study. So that's on the back page. So that's essentially the A8 amendment, and I don't think anything in there would be controversial, I would hope.
Could you get my, I have some
assessment to the pink.
I'm sorry, it's a little hard to engross it.
Is it, Senator Anderson, could you take us through it and just tell us what each step does?
And I'm sorry I don't have this all in a delete all amendment, as might have been easier. I should have suggested that. Thank you. So page 1, line 31, let's see. Okay, if you have the A4 amendment in front of you and you look at the Midwestern Greenhouse Gas Accord, section 3, what we, again, this is related to the PCA and the Department of Commerce have to report back to the legislative committees about the development of the model Midwestern rule. And this just adds to the things they have to tell us about. They have to report on the status of the development of the rule, implementation mechanisms in the model rule, including required legislation, and they have to report whether the regional cap and trade program will operate in a time frame that will allow Minnesota to meet our greenhouse gas reduction goals, and also to evaluate any legislation enacted or pending in Congress related to a federal cap and trade and how that would be consistent with the regional plan. So that's the additional language for the reporting back. And then if you go to 1.16 of the amendment, that's the sentence that says that instead of just asking the University of Minnesota to do the study, we're asking the Department of Commerce to set up this study, either through an RFP or through directly requesting it from the university or another college.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olstein?
I don't think I have
Husing?
The right page.
Oh.
I don't think we've got
Does everybody have the A8 amendment?
I'm confused.
So today's folder.
Mine wasn't.
9, A10, and A4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
A4.
It was in today.
And we're working off the delete all amendment?
Yes, the A4 delete all amendment.
A8. Do you have an A8?
I don't have an A8.
See, others don't have it either.
Okay. I haven't even.
It was in today's folder.
No.
It was in today's folder.
Oh, right.
File.
Yeah, I just passed the 8, the 9, and the 10 have. Yeah, everybody's getting those copies.
Thanks.
Has everybody located the A8 amendment?
Okay.
And the A4 amendment? Okay. Okay, Senator Anderson.
All right, so.
Start again.
Just where I left off. If you go to 1.19 of the amendment, of the A8 amendment.
I didn't. Though.
I incorporated Mr. Robertson's language about reporting back and combining the two studies that I had in my original bill. And then on 1.24 of the amendment.
Oh, he's got it.
Mr. Robertson suggested estimating allowance prices if allowances were to be sold and rates of investment by facilities subject to the cap and trade program to reduce emissions, to study that. And then 1.28 asked the study to look at estimates of increases in energy prices and impacts of price increases on businesses and family income. Whether price increases would be regressive and how to avoid that regressivity. That combines some of my language and some of Mr. Robertson's language. And then the last section on page 1 of the amendment is, again, it's a variation on what I already had in my study, but it's stated as an analysis of options to mitigate adverse competitive impacts on state businesses and reduce disruptive impacts on workers, businesses, and consumers. And then the last page is the assessment. And, again, this was suggested as a way to pay for the study.
And any questions or comments on the amendment? Then on Senator Anderson's motion to adopt the A8 amendment, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A9 amendment, and this is a language change in the section related to offsets in our principal section. So, again, working off the A4 amendment, the delete all amendment, if you look at line 21, one of the principles expressed in my bill is that in order to protect the integrity of this cap, you don't want to be able to buy allowances from outside the cap. And this softens the language just a little bit to say that we would like the program to be designed to obtain emissions reductions necessary from within the cap. So it's a pretty small change, but it does put a little more flexibility into the language. So I would move that A9 amendment.
Discussion about the A9 amendment. On the A9 amendment, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Finally, Madam Chair, and I thank you to Mr. Fuller, who's been patient with me scribbling things all day and saying, write this, write this, write this. And so I keep trying to come up with some language that seems to do the trick. This is the A10 amendment is another attempt at trying to improve the principle, the statement about whether you're going to sell these allowances or whether you're going to give them away for free. As I mentioned, there's been a lot of consternation about that subject. And so in an effort to try to make it more palatable to more of the stakeholders, what I have done is change it to, again, to kind of try to state the principles that we're aiming for without saying it has to be this way or that way. You know, I've expressed my preference for selling and or auctioning allowances, but this says that the system that's designed should provide that allowances accrue to the benefit of the public, and states that if there is an auction, revenue would help consumers and energy-intensive industries pay their energy costs and reduce their energy costs more quickly. But we also state, as part of this balanced discussion that needs to occur, that business concerns about paying the cost of allowances must be balanced with the benefit to the public. So this would replace the language in the A4 amendment on lines 1.16 to 1.17. So that, again, is an effort to try to keep everybody happy and keep everybody moving in the same direction. So I would move the A-10 amendment.
Discussion about the A-10 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, then, let's see, in this amendment, basically you just, you're putting in the word allowances instead of, you're taking out the word auctions.
Yes. Well, sorry, Madam Chair, I don't want to interrupt.
Well, I'm just thinking that if it would be possible, and if you've had this conversation about allocations and auctions, because it does look like there is, it's just geared towards auctions and not the allocations, and I think that is something that needs to be discussed further with the stakeholders too, is this is, you are assuming this is going to be all just auctioned off. And to me, I guess I don't know that much about it.
Well, Madam Chair,
how this came about.
Senator Rosen, Anderson.
My original bill assumed that. My original bill said they all have to be auctioned off. And that there was a lot of resistance to that. So we had the stakeholder meeting, and after listening to a lot of concern about making that assumption, I came up with the language in A4 which says that we should auction them to the extent that we can, that's economically feasible. And there's still people who are concerned about that because they said it still suggests that we're going to auction off most of the allowances. So this third version is the strongest compromise I've proposed yet that doesn't say we have to auction allowances. Rather, it says that here's the benefit of auctioning allowances to consumers. And that needs to be balanced with the cost to businesses. So it doesn't decide whether we're going to auction or not. It just says that we have to benefit the public, and we have to balance those benefits with the cost to business. And so, really, it's an attempt to, you know, it's a concession to try to keep everybody, as I said, moving in the same direction and to indicate that this is a discussion that has yet to be finalized. That in the regional process, there will be a very robust discussion about the benefits of auctioning and the costs of auctioning, the costs and the benefits balanced against each other.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Senator Anderson, have you considered allowing allocations in that terminology there, in this sentence, saying allocations and or auctions or allowances?
Well, where
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm not sure where you, let's see.
Right here. With allowances.
When you say allowances on line 4, that just means allowances. It doesn't say it doesn't describe whether they're free or there's a cost.
Madam Chair, so that can include that
Senator
you could say
Rosen.
That could be allocations and or auctions.
Yes.
And Madam Chair, can we Senator Anderson, Rosen. Can we do that for all your other auctions in here and give that freedom?
Senator
Anderson. On page 1.18, should allow allocations or auctions to be phased in if necessary. The entire subdivision is geared towards auctions. Senator Anderson. So I'm just trying to figure out if we can come to an agreement that that includes and keeps allocations in the discussion.
Well,
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, that's exactly what I'm trying to do, is to say that we're not demanding that they all be auctioned off. That, and if they're not auctioned off, some of them will be allocated. I mean, some will be auctioned and some will be allocated, and I don't think we're deciding what percent will be or won't be auctioned.
But Madam,
or
Senator Rosen.
But Madam Chair, that's the crux of the problem, is that by this language, you have decided that auctioned is the method that is going to happen, and you're including some allocations, but I'm just trying to keep it open.
Madam
to
Chair,
discussion.
Senator Rosen, are you trying to keep
Senator
it open
Anderson.
The possibility that it would be 100% allocation?
Possibly, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, I wouldn't support that, Madam Chair. I think most of the stakeholders, I mean, yeah, there's, I guess I shouldn't speak for the stakeholders because I heard all different opinions, but a number of them suggested that we should auction some of the allowances. There's just resistance to 100% from those who emit and would have to pay for them. But there's also a tremendous benefit that could come to the public if we auctioned allowances. And I just want to be clear that we state what the benefits are, but that those be balanced and that there be a discussion about what the mix should be between auction and allowance, because there's going to be a mix.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just state a caution. The parallel is the public ownership of the airwaves for broadcasting purposes. I don't think there's any dispute. I think there was a dispute when that was set up, but it's commonly accepted now that public owns the airwaves and broadcasters purchase those rights to the airwaves. The atmosphere, the air that we breathe, belongs to the public, belongs to all of us. It doesn't belong to any one industry. And right now, industry is free to just belch toxins and CO2 into the atmosphere free of charge. Like it's an open sewer, just dump it out there. There's no charge, despite the fact that it doesn't belong to any one entity or interest. And so the rationale for auctions is that that has a cost, that has a consequence, a real one, and, you know, a larger principle. The atmosphere belongs to everyone. No one gets to just use it for free or make money off of it, you know, by getting these allocations and then creating a private trading system and making a ton of money. So that's the principle. If we're to actually pursue the goals of climate change, reversing global warming, we need to make sure that we recognize that principle and that we raise some of the resources that are necessary to pursue that as well. And that can only be carried out by the public, you know, by the place where we come together and make those decisions, you know, in the public realm. And so I would just caution Senator Anderson and folks in this room from knocking this back too far, because it's going to lose my support pretty quickly. And I'm not going to vote for this bill because I'm not going to see that I'm carrying out my public responsibility.
Senator Rama.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Senator Dibble said more eloquently what I was going to say.
Any other questions or comments?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'm trying to get a sense from the committee, from Senator Dimble and Senator Rummel, if you think that the A-10 amendment goes too far in not supporting the concept of polluter pays for the, you know, for the right to emit. I mean, because I'm trying to find a compromise here that can move us forward, but also make sure that these principles are...
Madam Chair?
...are clear.
Senator Dibble.
Allowances doesn't have the that scary word auction in it that some people seem to dislike, but I think it allows for the concept, as Senator Anderson articulated in A-10. I'm comfortable supporting the A-10, but I think there's some suggestion that, you know, any reference to auctions, if they should exist, they be phased in, be stripped out, and, you know, and Frank, pretty soon we're going to be tilting this bill in a way that says that we're going to be excluding the consideration of auctions and, or, you know, public benefit even, you know, from requiring folks who are polluting our environment to pay for what they're doing in a way that benefits the public as it should. And so that's the point I was making. I'm comfortable with the A-10, but it seems like Senator Anderson has been working very hard and has stepped back and stepped back and stepped back. I've been watching the process very closely. I attended part of the stakeholder meeting and been in conversation with her, and I think she has made a lot of concessions. And it seems like every time a concession is made, the line gets moved backwards. It's just to take another step back. Pretty soon, I'm out of here.
Any further comments, Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, sat in on the stakeholder meeting, and I do think this is a serious concession. As I read the language, to the extent that allowances are distributed, there is no assumption that it's 100% auction. To the extent that allowances are distributed through an auction, and then it continues to explain where it's going to go. And then the last sentence, allowances must be balanced with the benefits to the public. And it's that balance that I am interested in. And if we lose that, I have a concern.
Who is Senator Rosen?
Well, Madam Chair, I will agree with Senator Dibble. I think Senator Anderson has been very good about this whole process and listening to the concerns. Do you lay awake at night and think of all these things, Senator Anderson? You're amazing when you come to
sleeping.
your initiatives and your focus and vision is outstanding. I have several concerns about this bill because unfortunately, I was not able to go to the stakeholder meetings. But I do think this is a work in progress. And I appreciate all the time that you spent on this and listening to everybody and Mr. Fuller and all these changes. But I am very concerned about the direction that we're taking again without having ample time to look at this. I mean, as I've said before, this is a bonding year, and we're making some dramatic goals and principles that could have ramifications farther down the line. No one wants to protect the environment and look forward and keep our businesses strong and pure. But we need to have time to take a look at it also. And there are some fundamental differences in opinion on this very A-10 amendment that I think we should take a little more time to look at and discuss. And I'm going to have some more questions about the subdivision, too, with the principals.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I think this might be maybe we should vote first on the amendment. I'm sorry. And then I'll make my general statement.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On this amendment, I guess just so I understand, because I wasn't in any of these stakeholder meetings either, the last sentence about business concerns, about paying the cost of allowances, can you elaborate a little bit about what these business concerns are and just so I have a better idea what you're talking about?
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, in Europe where they had the first experiment with a cap and trade, what they did was gave away the allowances. That's what's called allocation. Right, that term. They gave them away and didn't charge any money for them. And the power companies raised the price of electricity, but and so consumers kind of got stuck with the bill without any way of being compensated. What we're talking about here is I don't want to get unfocused from your question. When you talk about auctioning allowances, what you're talking about is saying that if you are under the cap and you, if you're going to emit any greenhouse gases, you're going to have a permit from now on to do that, because we're going to have a limit on how much can be emitted, a ceiling. And so if you want that permit, you're going to have to pay for it. That's what auction means. And so the debate is whether you're going to get that permit for free from the government. The government's going to say, okay, how many tons? I forget how many tons we're going to be able to emit in Minnesota. Here's how many tons we have of emissions, and then, you know, you can either be given your part of those emissions to a permit for, or you have to pay for them. And so the business community's concern is that they'll have to buy those. They'll have to, it'll be a costly proposition for them. And we heard from the stakeholders, those, the price of that will be passed on to consumers, because that's kind of basic economics of how, you know, a business entity has to operate. And so their concern is that it's costly. It makes a cap and trade more expensive for them. But the benefit of doing it is that, number one, you know, you have this philosophical kind of understanding that if you're polluting, you should pay for that, and that it should cost more for things that are the bads, and it should be less expensive for the things that are the goods. And so that's the concept here, is that it's going to be more expensive to emit these carbon dioxide and other gases, and it's going to make saving energy and doing things more efficiently and cleaner, that's going to be cheaper. And so the idea of selling these allowances is that you're compensating the public for the fact that the atmosphere is being destroyed, and that it's going to give you a really strong economic incentive beyond having a cap to get you to reduce your emissions as fast as possible. And it's going to, there's going to be some revenue that can be used to try to help with the transition that we're going to all face as we move to a cap, carbon-capped world, so that you can help, you can rebate money to consumers so that their prices of their electricity don't go up and their gas prices don't go up. You can also help them put windows and insulation in their homes. You can help them, you can help develop, you can give incentives to industry to develop energy-efficient cars more quickly. You can help industries that are use a lot of energy more quickly adapt to this cap if you have those revenues available. And so that's kind of the balance that needs to, and that discussion will be taking place in the region. And I guess this raises what I wanted to say to Senator Rosen, that the discussion is moving forward. The six states are going to be developing a rule, a model rule, and it's going to be done by November. That's already decided. So really the question that this bill raises is, do we want to be involved in that process? Do we want to have a voice in that process, or do we just want Edward Garvey and the four stakeholders that the governor's appointed to decide and then bring it back to us? And they're wonderful people, but, you know, we're elected to have to represent our constituents as well and to have a participation in decisions that are this important for our state. And so I just want the legislature to weigh in and to say these are really important concerns to us about how you do it, and to have a voice.
Senator Dibble.
I just wanted to add one more quick thought to Senator Anderson's explanation, and that is there will be costs to consumers regardless of whether or not industry receives these allocations or those allowances are auctioned off, because, you know, scarcity is being created because there will be a cap, and industries will receive those allowances and they'll be selling them then, either selling them, you know, if they come in under their allowance, then they have a credit that they can sell to someone who has too much. So not only So consumers will bear that cost. There is no doubt carbon dioxide is going to have a cost in the future that it doesn't have today. So we don't dodge that by avoiding an auction. And in fact, I'll go one step further. Potentially, industry that is nimble enough and innovative enough will be making, you know, and rather than emitting carbon dioxide, does something different, as Senator Anderson described, some innovative technology that reduces its carbon dioxide emission. Some will be actually making a lot of money, which is good. That's the market system. That's the way the system is supposed to work. So the question, kind of the philosophical discussion or the choice that we have in front of us is, you know, as I described earlier, does the public benefit, you know, and that, and the underlying principle is the atmosphere belongs to everyone, and it's only in the public realm that we can make decisions jointly about how to proceed.
So any further comments on the A-10 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
And maybe Senator Anderson can help me once again. I'm sitting here thinking about, the Midwest compact, I'll call it, and I'm thinking about our governor going down to Des Moines or wherever it might be with five other governors and staff and maybe even some legislators, and they're down there trying to negotiate and come up and you know, four states like auctions and two states like, you know, allowances, and the governor's totally hands are tied because he's down there with a Minnesota statute that's been adopted and he doesn't have much flexibility to be able to work. How do we expect our governor to go down anywhere and meet with these other states if he doesn't at least have some openness to, in fact, negotiate with the other states who may or may not, as I said, individually agree or disagree with anything we're talking about here today? How do you expect that process to work? Because I can't imagine it would work very well unless there is some freedom for the governor to negotiate. And then we can decide in the end whether or not he's negotiated properly and probably in the end decide whether we want to be part of this compact or not. But I'm just trying to understand what we're doing here today, because we say initially in the legislation that we intend to be part of this program, but we intend to be part of it, it seems like, as long as, you know, the rules they play by are our rules. And it seems like there ought to be some openness, at least at the start of this whole thing, so that governors can work together and make something work.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum.
Senator Anderson.
I think that concern and that criticism was valid about the original bill.
Okay.
But I don't think it is anymore. Because in the A4 amendment and listening to the stakeholders and listening to Director Garvey in particular about those concerns, I think we've removed those problems from the bill. Because my intent is not to say, Governor, you have to do this. I mean, I'd love to, but that's not what I'm doing in this bill. I know that won't fly, because this is intended to be, we're intending to, we took out the language that says this is has to be implemented. And okay, we took out the language that says it has to be, the governor's agreement has to have these principles in it. It doesn't say that at all. And so I don't believe we are tying the governor's hands.
Okay.
Again, I'm trying to find that elusive balance, that middle ground of saying we want to have a voice, but we don't want to tie his hands. We want to say before it's too late, before he goes and negotiates and comes back with something, you know, we may or may not like, we want to at least say, here's what we think. And, you know, but we're not saying you have to do this.
Madam Chair and Mr. Senator Andrew, is it
Senjum.
Then so I understand we're basically doing this, and maybe it in fact says it right in front. We're sending the governor down, I'll just say, to Des Moines with a bunch of a principal.
Exactly.
And not necessarily, you know, a mandate.
Absolutely true.
Okay.
Absolutely. This is not a mandate.
Okay. Senator Sharon, did you have some questions?
I did have a question. I'm not sure if it's meaningful any longer. I want to go back to this A-10 amendment that everybody's asking about. When, to the extent the allowances are distributed through an auction, the revenue should help consumers and energy-intensive industries pay their energy costs and reduce their energy costs more quickly. when you were just talking about how the public might benefit from that in terms of finding new methods, maybe replacing some windows, those things made sense to me. But where I get confused, if this goes forward, if there is an auction and there is a public benefit for the pollution that occurs up to the cap, that's what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
If we use that resource to reduce costs, are we undermining the motivating factor? I mean, I can understand the portion of the utilization of the money for encouraging energy efficient investment in a business or an industry, but if you're just writing down someone's cost in a home, what would be their motivation to do the things to their home that they need to do for conservation?
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, that's a really good question. And there's another raging debate going on, not just whether you should auction allowances or give them for free, but how you should use the allowance. There is the auction money if you have an auction. And some people say you should just rebate every penny of it per capita to people. Just as a matter of fairness, because the atmosphere belongs to the public and they should get the benefit of selling the ability to pollute it. But there is that concern, then, you know, is that really going to give them an incentive to change their behavior? And so some people on the other extreme say all the money should be used by policymakers to figure out how to do more energy efficiency than the cap is already encouraging. I would say where I would fall and where my bill said originally, a majority of the proceeds should go. To say for the public benefit sort of begs that question. And part of what I want to do in this bill, again, is to establish principles and not to give all the answers, but more to sort of say here's what some of the concerns are. But I would say a majority should be returned to consumers. The way I would envision it, and this is just my idea, it doesn't really say that in here, is that you'd have sort of this two-track thing. You'd help people pay their higher bills for a period of a few years at the same time by giving them a refund, but at the same time you'd do supersized energy improvements. You know, you'd do a Marshall Plan to fix up every old house in Minnesota so that they're not leaky, so that you can reduce everyone's energy costs and energy consumption even if prices go up. So you could sort of phase out the need to pay their bills, to help them pay their bills, to help pay that increased cost.
We're getting
so
a
sort
little
of a combination. I'm sorry,
field of
Madam
the amendment
Chair.
At this time.
I'm going on and on. Sorry.
Okay. Senator Rosen, is your question on the amendment?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Madam Chair. And it's also to Senator Senjum's comments about the governor taking down to Des Moines, a product, something that he believes in and that's been agreed upon. Yes. However, when I look at on line 5 in the amendment and then also on page 1 of line 12, the accrue to the public or accrue to the benefit of the public, to me, isn't that a tax? Doesn't that mean that basically it's a tax? And this would have to go to the tax committee, I would assume, but because this is basically a charge, and you have to assume that this is a tax, and is it going into the general fund? But then you clarified, well, it's going to go back to winterizing or rebates or whatever. But still, in my mind, it's a tax.
Senator Rosen, I think that we're just talking about a policy recommendation at this time.
It's kind of a concept, Madam Chair. It's not. It's a philosophical statement more than anything. So I wouldn't call it.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, that could be construed as a tax. Is that correct?
I don't really think so. Because I really don't agree with that, Madam Chair.
And there's no money exchanging hands at this point.
But, Madam Chair, an auction, this is the philosophical differences. Is an auction is something where they're having to buy, so they're being basically taxed off something that could have been allowed or allocated.
Madam Chair, if there is a cost, if you do have to pay for that allowance, it would be more like a fee than a tax, because it would be for a certain, you're getting something for it, you're buying something. It's not a general tax to any particular sector. It's if you want to emit carbon, you have to buy a permit to do it. It's like right now, if you want to, you know, put phosphorus into the water, you have to get a permit for that. It's the same idea. You just have to pay for that.
Okay, Madam Chair.
And Senator Rosen, it will go to finance.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Has the I'm not sure if Commissioner Garvey is going to be speaking or testifying, but has this been weighed in with the governor's office? Is this something that he can take to his regional meeting and say, I do believe in this? Because if we're just going through the semantics and this is not going to be adopted or believed in, then I think it needs more work.
Madam Chair, I don't...
Senator Anderson.
I don't know if passing a bill will make the governor believe something. I can't... I don't have that power, but we've been trying to work with Director Garvey to meet his concerns, which is why I changed it dramatically, I think, in the sense that Senator St. John was concerned about, to not tie the governor's hands. It establishes what the legislature thinks. But, you know, the governor sometimes... It helps him to know where we're at, so when he comes back, he has a better idea of where he would stand.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Just for the record, I am still very confused in why we're doing this if we still haven't got it nailed down. So I'm hoping that the conversations still continue and that we have more buy-in. And I do appreciate, Senator Anderson, all your diligence and your work and your conversations and all the stakeholder groups, but this is a big issue, and I look at how long it took the your renewable energy and your renewable energy initiative, and how long it took this legislature to get to that point where we had a comfort level, and I'm hoping that we can achieve a comfort level with this, but it's not there. So,
Senator Anderson, well, first of all, on the amendment, is there any further discussion on the amendment? Then on the A-10 amendment, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Anderson, I have to say that with your last three amendments, you've really, really made some concessions here and accommodated the wishes of many of the stakeholders. So I commend you on that.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the bill? Although we have a number of people that would like to address the panel here, so maybe it would be best to call on the public at this time instead and save our questions and comments until they're finished.
Sounds good.
Jay Drake Hamilton is the first. And Brad Leto. Leto.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Jay Drake Hamilton, and I serve as Science Policy Director for Fresh Energy. I oversee Fresh Energy's Global Warming Solutions Program, which is aimed at building a 21st century energy economy for the state and region around clean, efficient sources of energy for our economy. I also was appointed by Governor Pawlenty, one of 55 or 56 members of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. And on that advisory group, I served on the energy supply, cap and trade, and cross-cutting issues technical working groups, as did a number of the other people who will be testifying today. Today, I'm also testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. The partnership is a coalition of 80 conservation groups and environmental organizations with membership throughout Minnesota who believe collectively in the protection of our lakes, forests, land, and air, being at the very core of protecting Minnesota's futures. Our members all told number about 500,000 Minnesotans, and today we have selected one of our voices to testify rather than having 20 or 80 groups testify. So we're trying to streamline our testimony. Every year, every legislative session, MEP's members choose a few issues that we believe rise to the level of having the full force of the coalition behind their passage. Our members have some, and we call this our collaborative or priority agenda. Our members have some criteria in mind when selecting an issue. We want to select only a few issues. One criteria is the impact it will have on Minnesota's future and our great outdoors, whether or not the issue has broad public support, and the timing. Are we in a sweet spot where the state both needs to move forward on an issue, and it seems that this is the time to be successful on the issue? The original version of this bill, Senate File 2818, the Green Solutions Act, in its first engrossment, met all of those criteria, and we really support the original version of that bill. But I'll speak to the concessions that have been made as well. This legislature in 2007 had a lot of testimony in this committee and others about the impacts and costs of global warming that are now being incurred in Minnesota, and acknowledged that we need to limit global warming emissions from major sources and that we need to lower the emissions limit over time in order to achieve the goals that were set out in the Next Generation Energy Act. The legislature also determined and directed the Climate Change Advisory Group to look at employing a region-wide policy such as cap and trade that will use market forces to reduce the costs of achieving those emissions reductions. It's important to keep in mind what our emissions are. According to the Climate Change Advisory Group's draft inventory in 2005, which is the base year that this legislature set for reductions, Minnesota emitted about 155 million metric tons of carbon dioxide. Under business as usual, according to the Pollution Control Agency, in 2015, that first nick point in time when we're supposed to see reductions, under business as usual, we would actually increase emissions by almost 12% to about 173 million metric tons. And the second nick point in time where we need to achieve 30% reductions, instead emissions would be up by about 28% to 197 million metric tons. So with apologies, I don't want to wrangle anyone on the committee, but it's as if I got onto Interstate 35 today after leaving this hearing and decided that I wanted to go to Albert Lea. And after time, I kind of looked up from my thoughts and saw the signs and saw that, in fact, I was heading to Duluth. So I'm heading in exactly both wonderful places, but I'm heading in exactly the wrong direction. And, of course, in the case of global warming, one of those places is not a very nice place to be, and we want to protect both of the climate of both of those places. So emissions are rising, even though the legislature has determined that and set goals properly science-based. There's nothing on the books right now that actually limits greenhouse gas emissions. And existing laws, including the renewable electricity standard that was passed last year and the excellent energy efficiency and conservation provisions in the Next Generation Act, they would only reduce the increase in emissions. They don't actually get us the decrease that we looked at in the Climate Change Advisory Group as directed by the legislature. Fortunately, the Climate Change Advisory Group determined that looking at a set of over 40 incentives and policy mechanisms, Minnesota can get to the 30% by 2025 reductions that we need if we implement fully all of those recommendations beginning immediately. So our job is a tough one. It's important for cap and trade to know that the Climate Change Advisory Group voted on cap and trade, and a majority of the members of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group, which was very industry-dominated, voted in favor of having a region-wide cap-and-trade policy as being the mechanism that would help the state achieve its goals and be the overarching framework at the lowest possible cost. But they also took to heart that any new system like this is a brand-new way to do the economy, and it needs to be simple, it needs to be clear, it needs to be transparent. So we support Senate File 2818, in particular because we saw that version of the bill, the original version, as a simple, powerful vehicle that would guide our governor and the other governors, we would hope, in moving us forward in the right way and creating a successful and good market. In particular, we support 100% auction of global warming pollution allowances, with the auction revenues to be used to speed the transition to a clean, lower-carbon economy. It's interesting to note that the only PhD economist on the Climate Change Advisory Group, Dr. Steve Pulaski, testified before the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force just before session began that it is the opinion of the majority of economists that the right thing to do in establishing a new market like this is to move speedily and thoughtfully to full auction for all of the principles that were laid out by many members of this committee. We also think it's very important that the bill not allow offsets outside the limited system, which would weaken the limit and would mean that the program could not meet the goals that Minnesota set for itself wisely in 2007. We really appreciate the stakeholder process that that the chair convened on last Friday. We think it's very important to listen to all parties because we are creating a new We are moving toward a new low-carbon market economy, and we need to do it right. The details are very important. I think Fresh Energy and everyone I've talked to believes that a national market system, it would ultimately be the best way to go. However, The very strongest bill that's being considered in the U.S. Senate now, the Warner-Lieberman bill, would not achieve the emissions reductions that Minnesota set for itself. So we cannot rely on that mechanism in Congress. We need to weigh in as elected officials in Minnesota and the public in Minnesota about how we're best going to achieve those reductions at the lowest cost. We're very concerned that the concessions are on the borderline of going too far and so greatly weakening the hand of Minnesota's elected leaders that we don't think you're going to have enough say in preserving the public benefits that we need to retain as we move to a low-carbon economy. So this is a serious, important issue. We very much urge legislative leaders to make their voices heard, especially through the principles that are laid out in Subdivision 2 of the A4 Amendment. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from members? Mr. Leto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Brad Leto, Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and I'll be fairly quick. As I testified previously, we do support Senate File 2818 as it was. Looking at, I did have a chance to, a few other union representatives had a chance to attend the stakeholder meetings and listen to the concerns. And I also, I'm a realist. We rarely, whether we say sometimes that we believe in all or nothing, we seldom ever agree to everything. I mean, or get everything, I guess. I understand the concessions, and I'm concerned with some of them. However, as I said, I'm a realist. Just a couple of comments, so we would support the changes as well. A couple of comments, so just on, I was listening, I know there's been concern expressed before a regional process versus a national process. I don't think either one is going to stop. The other thing, though, is that I think within the AFL-CIO, Minnesota AFL-CIO, we've dealt with both coasts and with state federations and national groups on both coasts. And I will tell you, I believe the Midwest it is much more sensible. It takes a much more sensible approach, at least certainly in our work. And so I think, and besides the fact that the regional process is ongoing, the governor is already committed to it. I think that providing the governor, whether he accepts or not, providing him with some guidance, whoever the governor may be, and I don't care if it's Republican, Democrat, Independent, whoever, providing the legislature, providing some information to the governor to take forth, I find it unlikely that any other legislature with the other five or six governors that have signed on thus far are not going to provide some information and some direction to their governor. And I think if we don't do that, and I think this is been mellowed out somewhat, and it is probably still a work in progress is my guess, but I would caution, again, I would agree with some to say not to go too far, but if we don't say something, and this does, I think, opens up between allowances and auction, let's just say we say nothing, and four other governors say we have to have 100% auction, and the governor has nothing to say, or let's say five other states say we have to have 100% auction, and he has nothing from the intent from the legislature, or vice versa in allowances. I mean, I think it's it would only be helpful to I don't know if Mr. Garvey will agree or not, but that's our reading of it. So I'm happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments, Senator Olsen?
Jeez, Madam Chair, on your point on number five, that's some pretty harsh stuff about other nations. If they don't participate. I suppose that's kind of your way to have a stick. I understand, too, because I've heard at this table many times that global
warming, if Minnesota does something, China coming online with a power plant every week, we're offsetting a lot, or they're pumping a lot of stuff into the atmosphere.
I think where that, Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, that principle actually was discussed at length amongst groups. There's some states I know that in California, for example, not specifically on this issue, but actually put in some standards. They have a very strong cement making industry, unionized industry for the large part, but not all union, but a very strong industry. And what happened is, and actually the manufacturers in general agreed with a lot of the provisions. What happened then is a lot of folks went to Mexico, which had absolutely no standards, and so they've actually put in language such as that because it does meet the NAFTA and other, because we're keeping ourselves to those standards, higher standards. So that's where that kind of came from. It doesn't necessarily fit in quite as well with this legislation, but I mean the board adopted a lot more than this to deal with this legislation. So thank you.
Well, and Madam Chair, on that, I just wanted to say that my intention is that we would study that issue as part of this. Is a very broad-ranging study, but I think we really need to look closely at impacts on industries like that and see what different types of mechanisms would work to try to help protect the jobs and protect those industries from unfair competition. So I think it's something we need to take seriously, and we didn't require anything like that in the bill, but I think we need to analyze it and try to come up with a plan.
Okay, and next I'd like to call on Mike Robertson.
Madam Chair.
And
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I feel this opportune moment. And Ms. Hamilton, is it? I want to get your perspective on auctions because, you know, when I go to auctions, you know, the rich guy gets all the good stuff and the poor guy gets all the junk. And so this isn't quite the same, but thinking about it, I'm trying to understand if you just sort of unfold this auction scheme out a little bit, don't you end up really where you know, if you will, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer? I mean, if you are in an auction scenario and if you have the ability and the capital to get all the good stuff, in other words, to buy the ability to pollute over and above the poor soul that doesn't have the money to compete with you at the auction, don't if you carry that scenario out long enough, don't you in fact almost create, you know, monopolistic kind of situations, or help me just a little bit. I'm just kind of worried that the auction scenario gets, frankly, to, you know, to the rich and to the people that they can't buy any credits because they can't afford them.
Ms. Hamilton.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, that's especially our concern in supporting 100% auction, because as you move to a system where you're assigning a value to carbon in the atmosphere, right now there's no value. So people like me make decisions to put carbon in the atmosphere when I drive my car, and I have no financial signal to tell me to do otherwise. I may want to buy an efficient car for other reasons, but scale that up to industry, and there's no logical reason to do anything different. It's a huge market failure. So what we need to do is to swallow hard and to say we're causing damage to our climate and economy. We've realized that we need to move systematically in a different direction, and so we need to assign value to carbon. And so the idea is of those 155 million metric tons we need to reduce by 30% by 2025, that entities that emit that carbon would need to buy an allowance in order to have the right to pollute our common atmosphere, as has been discussed before. If you gave away the allowance for free, what you're doing is really privileging those people who've always been emitting. And what you're saying is you now have something of great value to people, particularly for unregulated industries. I think the indication is going to be that those companies will jack up the price of their products, pass that on to consumers. And consumers, unless this body and others decide to really maximize public benefits, consumers get screwed, because consumers will be paying disproportionately higher energy prices without any help to insulate their homes, to get to more efficient systems, et cetera. So I think the 100% allowance is definitely a giveaway that privileges the people who already have power and are very rich. And so the economists are saying when you create something that is going to have great value, you want to say we want to make this maximize the public benefit, and we want to not let government determine what the price tag should be. So the reason for having the auction, maybe the term is something that incites certain emotions, but it's really to let the market decide what the price. So people who emit and want to keep emitting would have to buy buy allowances at auction. That immediately sends that company or that entity the signal, hey, if I get more efficient and conserve energy, I will need to buy fewer allowances, and so it will cost me less money. If I switch over from fossil fuels to a cleaner source of energy that doesn't emit as much carbon, I will need to buy fewer allowances. That's a good thing. That's a signal that right now is not in the marketplace, and we need to establish that in the marketplace. So Fresh Energy and the Minnesota Environmental Partnership and the economists of the world and the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group, as they were looking at, they didn't weigh in on auctions versus no auctions, but there was considerable sentiment that, as we heard in testimony in the last committee in the Senate, that, you know, it seems to make sense at some point in time to phase into that 100% auction and as quickly as possible, because you don't want windfall profits going to the people who already have, who already are emitting for free. I don't know if that helps you or not.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Senator. Thank you. I'm going to call on Mike Robertson and also Doug Peterson at this time. And I am going to ask you to please hold to the three-minute comments that I had asked you to stick to. We are going to lose some of the members of our committee at 5:30, and I would like everybody to have a chance to vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Robertson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I have a handout that the staff is giving you, which is my written testimony from the other Senate committee and the House committee from last week. And I'm not going to read that testimony today. There are some attachments there that I may refer to, but I've been listening to the discussion, and I appreciate the work that has been done by Senator Anderson over the past days and the discussions that we have had. She is really mentioned my name several times about some of the work that I've done that is included in your packet at the end of my handout. But I'd like to try to get to the crux of how I see the issue after having this discussion over the past few weeks. You as a legislature clearly set a goal in the Next Generation Energy Act, a very tough goal, of eliminating 80% of our CO2 emissions. That's reducing from 155 million metric tons to only 30. That is the policy direction that we've set. And if you look at the, in my handout, the graph that's included at the end of the testimony shows that in the actions that you took last session, you selected the best options, the most productive options to begin to try to achieve that, the conservation improvement goal of 1.5% and the renewable energy standard. So you've already set us on a course that is going to go forward to try to achieve that goal. I want to talk about first where there's agreement here, some agreement, and I have to admit that sometimes in representing the Chamber of Commerce, it's a little bit like herding cats, and maybe some of you have that feeling around here too at the legislature. But I think everyone agrees that this clearly is a national issue, that this needs to be addressed at a congressional level. I mean, you've heard the senator talk about what's going on there and the three presidential candidates and all of the discussion that we know is going to occur in the coming months at the Congress. We support that national program, and I think there was a consensus in the MCAG process and in the business community that we need that national program. There's disagreement within the business community about whether we should proceed to do a Midwest program. The chamber is on board to go forward to develop a Midwest program. And so we are moving in that direction, and we agree that the next step needs to be taken on cap and trade. Now, the next thing that I think we have agreement on is that we need to know what the economic costs are going to be. One of the frustrations about the MCAG process is that there were a lot of numbers. There was some good work that was done on assessing what the financial impacts would be and that cost and benefit thing. But in the end, when we got to a number, it was a number that said X dollars per ton of carbon reduced. It didn't say cost of X dollars to whom. It just gave us a general societal number of that cost. What we need now, and where I think there is strong agreement in this legislation, is we need an economic study, a focused study, to look at what a cap-and-trade system is, how it works, who are going to be the winners and losers, what competitive impact this will have on the state's economy if we are in a regional system, how will that be impacted by a federal program, so that we can get to the issue that it has been the main focus of discussion here on how much revenue might the state need in order to offset some of those costs that we want to offset as a result of what's going to happen. As Jay Drake and others have said, costs are going to increase for energy and for consumption of our products. And that's going to occur whether you have an auction or whether you just have the issue of trying to meet the cap and reducing emissions below the cap. So the key factor in a cap and trade is that there is a cap, and that's going to go from 155 down to 30, and it's going to cost the consumers, the people who have to try to meet the cap, and eventually we're all going to have to pay. So those are the things that we agree on, and now I'd like to get to this third element that I think, I think the discussion that has occurred here about auction, it's a major element of what a cap-and-trade program has to deal with and make decisions about. We've had many discussions in the MCAG process about various principles within a cap-and-trade. This is a major one. And the issue that Senator Anderson has presented is how do you get legislative input into that process, and made the point that we want to have a voice in that process that's going to occur through the governor's leadership in those Midwestern states. And on that point, I would like to, because Senator Anderson did bring up my language, and I appreciated her adopting some of that language, I think if I could just very quickly run through the elements of that language that's at the back of my handout, point out how I think the legislative input can occur here. This isn't going to be a static moment in time for legislative input. You need to educate a broad range of legislators over the coming year on all of the issues that are going to be discussed, with a whole lot of information that's not available now that will be available as we move forward, and keep them informed and keep their advice coming to the governor's staff, to those folks who are going to be working on developing the Midwest process. And that's not going to be a static effort. So Senator Anderson talked about the legislative group that's mentioned in her bill, and if you look at Section 3 of my draft, I would suggest that you create a legislative climate change task force, and that there be a significant direction on the first page of my draft. I would have very specific language in that first subdivision about how the Director of Energy Security must interact with that legislative task force and come back to the legislative task force and talk about all of these policy issues, including auction, and have that discussion with more information and more input, taking that advice into consideration as this negotiation continues over time. I think the problem that is going to occur in your legislative discussion moving forward is the same one that we've had within the MCAG and within the business community, is that once we start talking about an auction or whatever the specific element of a cap-and-trade program might be, there are very wide-ranging views on what the various elements of a decision should be, and you end up with those kinds of views being expressed. And as you move through the legislative process, you're going to have the same kind of division. Eventually, you are going to have to make a decision on what this program will be. That will come maybe next year, hopefully next year, if this process works according to the timetable. But you will have in hand an economic report, an analysis of what the costs will be. You'll have the pros and cons of a and the structure of a cap and trade and how it might work. You'll have estimates of how much revenue might be needed in order to offset costs that you want to offset. You will have an impact study on what that auction might require and what the costs of an auction might be. If you look at my handout, you'll see a page out of the MCAG report that says estimated in 2025, if you auction 100% of the allowances, you would be raising $5 billion a year. That's a big decision. It's not a decision that I think you've got all of the information to make this year. And I understand that the language in the bill has been changed. And, you know, I look at the section that has the first section with the principles in it and note that it still says that it is the intent of the legislature. It's on the one hand, you might say that it's language that what does it matter? On the other hand, it's interpreted as major direction to the people who are going to be moving forward with this. So I think that the discussion can occur with the legislature in a representative group over time. We need the economic study. We gave suggestions on that. It needs to be focused. So we appreciate working with Senator Anderson on this. We will continue to work with her and others and try to come to a resolution of this, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Doug Peterson. I work for CenterPoint Energy. We're the largest natural gas utility in the state of Minnesota. Like many of the others that have been here before, I'm also a member of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group, and I also served on the MCAG Cap and Trade Work Group. I'm here today on behalf of CenterPoint Energy's 800,000 customers, of which 95% are either residential or small commercial customers who primarily use natural gas to heat their homes and businesses. Turning now to Senate File 2818, we continue to have serious concerns regarding the proposed principles on cap and trade that's in Senate File 2818 and urge that this section of the bill be removed. In particular, while the language regarding auctioning allowances has been modified, it is still strongly worded in favor of an auction approach. As I have testified previously in other committees, an auction approach is the most expensive approach to CenterPoint Energy's customers. We estimate that in 2015, an auction will cost our customers between $70 and $140 million per year, whereas a direct allocation approach would reduce our costs to only $10 to $20 million per year. In other words, an auction is seven times more costly than a direct allocation approach for our customers. For this reason, we support a direct allocation for regulated utilities like us, where there is no risk of windfall profits. We're also concerned with proposed principle number four, which restricts the use of allowance offsets from all sources. As a company that may have to purchase millions of allowances on behalf of our customers, we want the costs of the system to be as low as possible. To accomplish this, all legitimate and verifiable allowance offsets, regardless of the source, should be allowed under the program. In fact, if you don't include offsets from all sources, non-covered sectors won't be able to participate in the market, and there will actually be less greenhouse gas reductions. Finally, we're very concerned with proposed principle number five, which prohibits any type of market safety valve if the allowance price goes too high. This is a very serious issue because we simply don't know today what the cost of allowances will be in 2015, 2025, or 2035. We believe that any reasonable cap-and-trade program must include a safety valve if allowance prices go too high to avoid harm to the Minnesota economy and the consumers and businesses that reside here. In conclusion, based on our continuing serious concerns regarding the proposed cap-and-trade principles, we urge that you remove that section of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I understand, Mr. Peterson, you on this market-based system that we're trying to put in place, you want to put a cap on it so it can't go too high, that the market might drive it too high? I'm not sure I'm following you on that.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl.
Mr. Peterson.
The safety valve concept that I've raised, and I'm not sure what the price would be at which we think there's going to be too much damage to the economy, but right now there's no limit at all on the cost of the allowances that people would be buying or trading. And they could get to a level that the economy could not bear, the consumers could not bear. And so I think an example is out in the East Coast with REGI. They have put a cap on the allowance price, and when the allowance price goes above that level, they'll issue more allowances. There is an issue out there in terms of damage to the economy if you just say you're going to have this many allowances regardless of the price.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Peterson. The next speakers are Christina Wessel and Deb Bergen. Doesn't look like Deb.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. I have some handouts. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll cut my comments down to the quick here. But my name is Christina Wessel. I'm the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Budget Project. And the Minnesota Budget Project is an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. We provide independent research, analysis, and advocacy on budget and tax issues, with particular attention to the impact that fiscal decisions have on low- and moderate-income Minnesotans. And that's what brings me here today. We support the principle in Senate File 2818 to provide for equity to communities at risk of disproportionate economic and environmental impacts. And we hope that you intend to include low-income Minnesotans as one of those communities. We are also glad to see the Economic and Emissions Study will examine recommendations on how to avoid regressive impacts. We hope that also means that the study will carefully measure what it might cost to offset these impacts and examine the most effective methods for delivering any offsets. There is no doubt that climate change is one of the most serious issues facing our country and our state, and we strongly support making progress on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. But effective climate change efforts should not lose sight of the serious impact those policies could have on low-income families already struggling financially. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a think tank in Washington, D.C., estimates that the lowest income households in the United States will face increased energy costs, related costs, averaging $750 to $950 per year as a result of even modest efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's because the potential cost to these families extends just beyond higher utility bills, but also includes higher costs for transportation and other consumer goods like food and clothing. This is a group whose average income is only about $13,000 a year, or $27,000 for a family of three. One reason that low-income Minnesotans would be disproportionately impacted by efforts to reduce greenhouse gases is because they are least likely or least able to respond to cost pressures to reduce their environmental footprint. For example, they do not have the resources to buy a more fuel-efficient car or fix their windows or replace their furnace. In addition, many low-income families live in rental housing, where they have little control over the energy efficiency of their home. We hope that Minnesota will make it a priority to use a portion of the revenues that could be raised through a cap-and-trade program to ensure that our efforts to reduce greenhouse emissions do not push people further into poverty. To help us achieve that goal, we recommend the following two principles. First, we should seek to fully offset the impact of higher costs on the lowest-income Minnesotans, those in the bottom 20% of the population. Fortunately, the cost may not be as high as you would expect. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities has estimated at the national level it would take about 14% of all the revenues raised from a cap-and-trade system to fully offset the cost to that bottom 20% and also help the 20% above that. We urge that the study proposed in this bill calculate the cost of accomplishing that here in Minnesota. Second, any effort to provide assistance to low-income Minnesotans should seek to reach as many as possible in the most cost-effective way. That includes saving on administrative and outreach costs by using existing mechanisms, and it may mean using more than one method in order to reach all the intended families. For example, the Center on Budget has recommended at the federal level an approach which would rely on a combination of delivery mechanisms. One method would be to use the existing electronic transfer, or EBT, system already used to deliver food stamps and combine that with expanding the earned income tax credit, which would, in combination, reach a vast majority of the households in the bottom fifth of the population using already existing mechanisms. We urge that the study proposed in Senate File 2818 examine how such a proposal might be adapted for here in Minnesota. So we strongly urge members to support gathering the information we need to know what the regressive impacts will be, measure the cost, and then determine the best methods for offsetting them. With that information in hand, you'll be able to make better decisions when the time comes. This is an important opportunity to bring together those concerned with protecting our environment and those concerned with ending poverty. We believe that there is plenty of common ground, and we hope to act as a resource as this bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sullivan.
Hi. Thank you for having me here today. I'm sitting in for Deb Bergen right now, but my name is Joe Sullivan. I represent Missouri River Energy Services. Missouri River Energy Services is a municipal power company. We service a number of communities in western Minnesota. Missouri River has long supported a hybrid approach to auctions and allocations, free allocations, and for that reason we very much appreciate the movement that Senator Anderson has made, we very much feel like we now have a seat at the table, and thank her for that. As far as we also very much support the Legislative Advisory Council in the bill. We think that's a very good provision within the bill, and we think that it's important that the legislature has a role in the stakeholder process and in the regional cap and trade system as it is developed. Now, I have not reviewed, and we have not reviewed all of the amendments that were earlier put into the bill, but we do have a couple of concerns. The first concern is in regards to offsets. Our feeling with offsets is that they, if they're certifiable and verifiable, that they should be included regardless of what sector they're a part of. So we would like to see that language change to something. This is provision 4, subdivision 2. We would like to see that provision say something along the lines that it's verifiable and certifiable rather than the current language. And we're also concerned that there's not a provision for a safety valve. But all in all, as we've reviewed this on first blush, we've reviewed the legislation, and we think that it is consistent with Missouri River's positions and policies. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Yes, thank you. I'm Larry Johnston with Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. Missouri River asked me to make a few comments on this as well. Actually, we believe that the state's selected a very aggressive approach, and as you know from probably my testimony last year, we do in fact support this, but we see this as a very tricky activity. From that standpoint, I mean, I think we're very comfortable with what Mike Robertson is talking about in terms of taking a little bit closer look. Picking up on the offset comment, one of the things that I think that we might want to think about with this, last year I talked about the fact that even if you take the current generation fleet, people's estimates are on plug-in hybrids, for example, that if you were to go to plug-in hybrids, even though we're powering them with additional electricity, that you're looking at probably a 30% overall reduction, even with our current fleet. Okay, so, I mean, if we get too tied up in, let's put this in this box, let's put this in this box, we're maybe liable to lose some of those interactive effects, frankly, that are going to be able to get us to the numbers that we're trying to get to. Additionally, we do support the concept that ultimately, if there's an auction, that the funds for those auctions ought to really try to cover two main items. One, the economic dislocations that we've talked about here before, but also mitigation. But in that mitigation, and this actually gets to Senator Dahl's question, who was kind of raising the point of, do we know what could happen with an auction? One of the things I might suggest from the electric sector side, this isn't like we were dealing with SO2. Frankly, there's not a technology out there for carbon capture and sequestration at the moment. So from the electric utility standpoint, we've talked about the fact that $5 billion number, that might be a floor. We don't know what that could turn into. We're essentially talking about getting allocations for a technology that doesn't exist. So that's very difficult. And so one of the things that we'd like to see ultimately is that any revenue stream that would come from the sale of an auction would be dedicated as well towards looking at alternatives for actually solving that problem long term. So those are things that we'd like to see in this as well. So one of the other things I think that I'll leave it at that. You have very short time. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you. Diane Schmidt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Diane Schmidt, and I represent Flint Hills Resources. Flint Hills Resources is a large oil refining company located in the metropolitan area. We supply about 50% of the fuel to Minnesotans. I know that there's been a lot of testimony, so I'm just going to make it easy and pass out my testimony that so you can read it. I just want to hit one point that I think is the only point that maybe hasn't been hit enough and covered, which is that right now Flint Hills in its situation doesn't have any alternatives. I mean, crude oil is all that we have to refine. So as we go forward, we would immediately have to buy credits. When we immediately buy those credits, I think as everyone's discussed before, those prices will have to be passed along to consumers. Okay, I just want to make sure everybody understands that. Those costs will have to be passed along. We don't really have alternatives. Additionally, one other factor I'd like to point out is we do get mixed signals from Congress versus the state, because recently we were required to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to turn our system over to provide ultra-low sulfur diesel, which is a good thing for the environment. However, one of the byproducts is a large increase in CO2. So as we have the federal government requiring us to increase our CO2 for one environmental purpose, and then we have other legislative and other federal requirements, we just need to take that into effect. And I think that's why I'm happy to see that there is going to be an economic study in here. I think we support that. I share the same concerns about sort of saying what the principles are before we actually do the economic study. I think we're better off sort of looking at the economic study, seeing what all of these studies have to say, and then coming back. And I also strongly support the legislative involvement. Of course, that would be important. I have one particular thing I'd like to suggest to the author, if she's interested or could consider it. On page 3, in subdivision 2.8, you talk about looking at protecting job loss in highly intense energy industries. And I would just suggest that you also would include refining as well as renewable fuels development, because renewable fuels as well as gasoline fuel both require a lot of energy, and I'd like to see what the impacts would also be on those industries. So if she would take that into consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Well, that brings us to the end of our testifiers, and so at this time I would open discussion to committee members regarding the bill itself. Senator Ant, rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support Senator Anderson's legislation. I support it as it was introduced. But with the way in which you have involved the legislature in the A4 amendment, you do need to visit with your counsel about making it adhere to the guidelines for advisory groups. We'll have to come in some way along its path to state and local government, and because you have legislators being appointed, the bill will also have to go to the Rules Committee. So by Senate rules. So I just want to make sure you understand there are going to be those two stops. In state and local government, we would not be dealing at all with policy, only with the guidelines for establishing some sort of legislator advisory group.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, I guess I thought by not creating a task force or something, I didn't realize that these rules would apply. So we'll have further conversations about that and absolutely have to follow the rules or make changes. So I appreciate that information. Madam Chair, just
Senator Anderson.
I just want to make one last comment. I think Mike Robertson really raised the issue again about waiting for the study, and I just want to make sure people understand that the process is moving forward before the study. Anyway, the regional process is moving forward. And so the governor has appointed 4 stakeholders to advise him during that regional negotiating process. Mike Robertson is one of them for the chamber. XL, Dave Sparby is one of them. Someone from General Electric and Bill Grant from the environmental community will be the 4 stakeholders. So they will be negotiating this process. I mean, it would be nice if we had the study before that happened, but we're going to have to wait. If we do it right, it's going to take a little more time. So, again, we need to have a voice now because it is moving forward with or without us. But it's also when we get to the point of actually implementing a cap and trade, passing legislation that will actually put the rules in place, if and when that occurs, then we will have all that information in front of us. So I think that's really important.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, if there's no other discussion, could I move the bill?
Well, actually, the, Senator Dahl has asked, would like to ask Director Garvey some questions.
I'll be quick. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was slightly unprepared here now. Mr. Garvey, the question I had is on this compact or this accord. I was looking on the back page on the kind of the timeline. Where is that? Here we go. And I'm looking at a couple of things that it says it was resolved that a work plan would be developed for by January 15th on some of the resolutions in here. And I'm just curious if that work plan has already been established, and do you have that, or is that something that's still in the works? I was also looking at it, I would say, and some of this might have been stuff that the MCAG has been doing, but the established targets for greenhouse gas emissions with state targets and adopt policies, implementation, and mechanisms for any work products deemed necessary, and that would be due by July 15th. And I'm wondering if we're going to be on target to reach that goal. And then finally, the complete development of this cap and trade system and model rule by November 15th. I'm just curious if we're on track with those things, or if you're going to need more time to meet those self-imposed goals. I would assume because I'm assuming the governor signed that.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, members of the committee,
Director Garvey.
Edward Garvey, Director of the Office of Energy Security. The work plan that has been put together is an internal work plan for the Midwest Governors Association. One of them was basically the creation of the stakeholder group and the starting the arrangement of the timing of that. All right, it is still a continual work in progress, as all work plans are.
2 months.
The creation of the stakeholder group, it has about 44 members on it. They will have their first meeting next week in Detroit with a workshop in advance of it being sponsored by the Pew Center for Global Climate Change, the World Resources Institute, the Center for Climate Strategies, and the Great Plains Institute. So that the members get a chance to get some, we'll call it baseline information on cap and trade principles. And then they will start sort of working through, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, the tasks that we have for them so that we can work and achieve the November 1 model rule development.
Okay. Well, I think the
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair and Mr. Garvey, I guess I'm thinking that part of the intent of what we're looking at here is we all agree we want to go in the same direction. We want to be able to assist you in any way we can to reach those goals. So I just was curious to see how that timeline was working. So I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, there's one little typo on the A4, the working draft. I guess we're working off of is the A4 amendment, and that is page 1, line 11, given should say gives. So just change that N to an S.
Okay. On Senator Anderson's oral amendment to change given to gives on line 1.11, any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
I'm sorry.
Amendment.
Madam Chair, if we're looking at typos, I believe there's another one on 3.12 between environmental and public, probably should have a D in there.
Thank you.
We already did that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Senator Dahl, on another amendment. Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I'm going to take Senator Rest's advice, and I'd like to move that Senate File 2818 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Senator Rest Committee on State and Local Government.
No, actually, it has to go to Business, Industry, and Jobs first.
I know it's been requested there, but we thought because of the schedule, Mr. Jarofsky just checked, because we were going to go to Business, Industry, and Jobs on Monday, we think. So we think Senator Rest thinks she could get us into her committee first. So I know I was going to move to Business, Industry, and Jobs. I know we have to go there, too. But if we could go to this committee first, I think we'll keep moving.
Okay. Okay.
Great. So then I would make that motion.
Government ops then.
Yes.
Any discussion about the bill? Senator Rosa.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I again like to thank Senator Anderson for all your work and your diligence on this. And I just want to reminisce just a little bit about last year's what we accomplished last year on energy and on our goals. And we did it in a very bipartisan manner. And it was huge. I'll never forget, you know, standing up there and the vote when it came in. I'm hoping, Senator Anderson, that you continue to work on this. I will not be able to vote for it today in its current form because, as noted in the audience and the testimony, there is still a lot of issues that need to be worked out. And I look forward to the day when the governor can take this down to his regional conference and say, I support this also. So continue to push on, but I would really appreciate it that when I can vote for it someday. Right now I can't. So thank you.
Further discussion? Okay, then let's vote on the bill as amended, Senate File 2818 as amended. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate it very much.
Sorry, the meeting is adjourned.
We'll be fine. We'll be fine.